Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report. It is the 17th day of June, 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. Gary Schnitke will be along to take up the ARC and PLC decision. Those numbers are all in, and if you chose ARC County for your farms, you're not alone. 94% of the corn acres and 97% of the soybean acres across the United States enrolled in ARC County. We'll figure out what that might mean as we move forward through the next several years, and then we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Drew Lerner out of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. A different path there. We'll discuss what's been happening with the tropical depression that came on shore in Texas and how it will travel through Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri, southern Illinois, and southern Indiana on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Checking the numbers as they finished up in Chicago for this Wednesday afternoon. Futures in the corn pit were up 5 1/4. Settlement price at $3.59 1/4 for the day. September, $3.65 1/4. 5 1/2 higher. And December futures up a nickel. $3.75 the settlement price. March corn at $3.86 1/4. Up 5 1/4. Next year's July, $4 even. 5 1/4 cents higher. Bean futures, November contract, rather July contract, 9.69, up 11 1/2. The August at 9.53 3/4, up 12. September up 11 1/4. November now at 9.39 3/4. Settlement price 12 1/4 higher. January beans up 12 1/4 as well at 9.45 3/4. Next year's July at 9.53 1/2, up a dime. July bean meal futures up $2.90, and the bean oil for the day finished a nickel lower. Chicago soft red winter wheat was 2 1/2 cents higher at $4.91 1/4. The hard red at 5.05 1/2 finished a penny lower. Live cattle futures on their last tick at 224.70, down 15 cents. That's the feeders. The live at a dime lower at 151.95, and the lean hogs on their last trade at $78, 2 1/2 cents, 87 1/2 cents higher for the afternoon. You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org. This is Illinois Public Media. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. The crude oil at $59.84 a barrel, down 13 cents. Ethanol futures at $1.47 6/10, 3/10 of a cent lower. Gasoline down 2 7/10 of a cent at $2.09 7/10. And diesel fuel up a penny and 9/10 at $1.90 4/10 of a cent per gallon. Natural gas at $2.85 7/10, 3 7/10 of a cent lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is currently trading for the day at 17,980. That's up 69 points. The U.S. dollar at 94.49 is down 0.772. And gold futures on the afternoon at $1,185.75 are up $4.75 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area as it comes from the National Weather Service. Showers and thunderstorms are likely this afternoon before 5 o'clock. Cloudy with a high of 80 degrees on a west-southwest wind at about 80 miles an hour. 80 miles at about 8 miles an hour. Our chance of precipitation set at 60%. Tonight, a 40% chance of rainfall. That'll come after 2 a.m. Mostly cloudy otherwise, a low of 69 degrees. Thursday, showers and thunderstorms again before 8 in the morning. Mostly cloudy, a high of 83. Southwest winds at 7 to 10. The chance of showers and thunderstorms continues into Thursday night. Mostly cloudy and a low of 65. And Friday, more rainfall. Mostly cloudy, a high of 81. Friday night, a 50% chance of rainfall, cloudy and 60. Saturday, rain 30%, mostly cloudy 87. Saturday night, a chance of thunderstorms, mostly cloudy and 70. And on Sunday, showers and thunderstorms, cloudy and 87. They continue into Sunday night, into Monday night, and into Tuesday.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Well, it is Wednesday, the 17th day of June. On the phone line with us to take a look at the marketplace and what happened in Chicago at the CME Group is Jackie Vake. She's at Stuart Peterson right here in Champaign County. Thanks so much, Jackie, for being with us. How are you today?
Oh, I'm very good. How about you?
I'm really good. Can you tell me a little bit about what Janet Yellen had to say during or after the Fed meeting for the day?
Well, I guess in general you could sum it up by saying that they confirmed that they believe that there is going to be a rate hike, if not two rate hikes yet this year. These will be the first one that comes is going to be the first one in 9 years. Can you imagine that? Mm. They said they felt that the economy bounced back enough after the hiccups in the first quarter that it wasn't enough to make them think that it's not going to happen. You know, I guess investors weren't happy. The dollar fell off right after because a lot of those guys thought, well, maybe they would do it now. You know, and it just doesn't. It just doesn't seem to be happening. I think everybody's really tired of waiting to find out. You know, every single month we go through the same thing. You know, is it going to happen? Isn't it going to happen? When are we going to do it? And then you look at the outside markets, you know, like Greece. Oh, Greece is just, you know, like Greece in real life makes you sick to your stomach. Greece makes you sick to your stomach, I'm telling you. It just doesn't seem like there's an agreement that's likely. You know, they're blaming each other. Greece says you're being unfair. But the scarier part from my perspective is that on Monday alone, the Greek citizens took over 400 million euros out of the bank just on Monday. And the prior 2 weeks, they took out about 200 to 250 million a week. So they live there. You know, we don't. I think they certainly know better about what's going on, so they're certainly very concerned. And I don't think the euro's not going to crumble because of Greece, but it could send some pretty big shockwaves out into the world in general. And then you look at Russia. Bank of Russia cut its key interest rate to 11.5%, saying that they think inflation is going to be 11% and unemployment's probably going to rise to 6.5% by the end of this year. So, you know, none of those are real good, you know, that's not real good news at the world economy levels. And we know that the world economy definitely affects us. So I think that from a dollar perspective, we're probably stuck in a sideways trading range for a while now. And then we'll see once what happens as we go forward.
What'd you make of the rally that we've had in the grains over the past couple of days?
Lots of short covering going on. There's no question about that. When you look at the, it was to be expected. You know, we came in at 87% planted. The USDA said there was probably about 12 million acres of beans yet to plant. I did some numbers on that and looked at the 18 major states. And in the 18 major states, there's about 10.5 million acres left. And I did it by individual state, and I gave them a higher production average than of the 3 years I looked at. And so that represents about 466 million bushels, basically. And there's so many people that are now saying, oh, you know, all those acres are going to go to prevent plant. Everything's going to go to prevent plant. And so when I was talking to clients are telling me just the opposite. They're saying, oh, prevent plant isn't the way to go because it just doesn't pay enough. And so I actually did took an Excel spreadsheet, Todd, and I looked at what if your last plant date for insurance is June 20th and you've got 80% coverage. Means that your bushels, you've got coverage of $7.78.4, okay, based on that 973 insurance rate that was determined in February. So if you don't plant, you continue to plant all the way to the 5th of July when you're down to only 65% insurance, you've given up 15% of insurance, you're down at $6.32 on the insured bushels, but for prevented plant, you're going to get $4.67 on the insured bushels. So if you look at, if you take the insured bushels and you spread them over the value of 100% of the crop, even all the way down to July 5th, you're at $5.06. So you're still almost 40 cents better than taking prevent plant. Now, it depends upon can they return seed. I know that there are restocking charges, and restocking charges get pretty, pretty hefty is what they do. So you can't take back fertilizer you put in the ground or anything like that. But it might explain one of the reasons that the farmer is saying, you know, I can plant later. And it's also probably a reason that so many times you see, like in Missouri and places like this in the South where they do double crop, that, you know, their final planting date is out there in the 5th or the 6th. And one question in my mind, Todd, you know, with the delayed wheat harvest because of the moisture, may we see them push the actual final insurance date for double crop beans out further than what it normally is?
I don't know. Do they do that?
Well, we've seen them make changes in years past, you know, when you had certain things going on. So I don't know, but you never know. I mean, that's the big question that's there. So
Jackie, really is when you look at the, and let's say it's between 8 and 12, so 10 million acres or something like that of soybeans yet to plant. What do we think is double crop and what is the first crop? So there are 990 million acres, 1,000 acres in Illinois, almost a million acres.
Right.
So,
right.
And that's probably all double crop, I would think,
in the ground. Nationally, I look back over the last 3 years, we've on double crop beans, we've been anywhere from 7 to 10%. So, the assumption, and I don't normally assume, but in this case, double crop would be the ones that are left to be planted yet. So, so at 84.6 million acres, you know, you're talking about 6 to 8.5 million
five
acres.
Five and a half, yeah, beans. 6 to 8, something like that. So,
yeah.
Half of what we're talking about is, let's say half of what we're talking about is first crop and half of it is double crop, right?
It would be more than half. I mean, you know, even at 6 million would be 50%. Let's say 50 to 85% or would be somewhere in that neighborhood.
But does that does that make a difference on the numbers you gave me, do you think, as to whether they will plant or not?
No, I don't think so. From an insurance standpoint, I don't think so. The guarantee is still the same, you know, so why would it make a difference? I can't see why it would, so it's just a matter of, I can't tell you how many guys in the last week I've had say to me, when I talk to them, I said, are you thinking about prevent plant? Are you kidding me? If I can get something in the ground and get it up and growing, and I qualify for insurance, even if it's beyond the insurance date, I can afford to give up. And that's why I did this, because I wanted to see, can you really afford to give up very much? Well, at 15%, you're still, if you just look at it on insured, at 15%, you're almost $1.60 higher if you planted something versus taking, the prevented plant. So.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things that figure in, Todd. You know, it costs of fuel, everything you can think of, you know, that can go into this. But it's, you know, from a farmer's perspective, I still think, you know, that they're going to try if they can. Let's just put it that way.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too. That, of course, is Jackie Vang. She's at Stewart Peterson right here in Champaign County. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined by Gary Schnittke, ag economist from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I, to take up the Arc County, ARC-IC, PLC farm program decision. It's been made, the numbers are in, and overwhelmingly, maybe a little unexpectedly, farmers chose to use the ARC County. How did that happen?
Yeah, they did. And if you look at it, ARC County was used on 76% of program acres, PLC on 23%, and ARC-IC less than 1%. But ARC County, probably what contributed most to its big numbers is that corn and soybean acres were overwhelmingly enrolled in it. So we had over 90% of the program acres enrolled in ARC County for corn and soybeans.
Yeah, it's important, I suppose, to remember that there are many different, 14 different program crops or thereabouts, so that corn and soybeans happen to be the largest too. And while you say 76% are in our county, the bulk of those, a lot of them, are through that corn and soybean.
Yeah, figure. So corn and soybeans, and most definitely, because corn and soybeans are large program crops or total number of acres and overwhelmingly enrolled in Arc County. Again, 90%, over 90% of corn and soybean acres are enrolled in Arc County.
The number is 97%, if I remember correctly, for soybeans. That's a large number. That one's not so unexpected. I think that was an easy decision from your perspective for farmers across the entirety of the nation to make.
Yeah, and corn was 94%, so it's not all that far behind soybeans. I would have was expecting more PLC for corn. I thought farmers would split the decision and put some of their acres or FSA farms in Arc County and some of them in PLC. They did not do that. I mean, to get 94% of the acres, farmers went in there and enrolled all their acres in Arc County.
What does it tell us, if anything, about what farmers like about those programs, what the ease of use might have been, how that decision was made? And I know it's simply stats, but there has to be something there that we can understand out of the program decision.
Yeah, you can say a couple things. One is that they sort of went along the same routes as they do with their crop insurance policies. Revenue policies are predominantly the over 90% of corn and soybeans are insured with revenue policies, and corn and the program choice was the same thing. So if you make a Arc County is a simple program to enroll in. It's a revenue program, and farmers were comfortable with that sort of program. You can also say that they didn't want SCO, because as soon as they enrolled in Arc County or Arc IC, they did not get SCO. So 94% of the corn acres, 97% of the soybean acres aren't in SCO or are not eligible for SCO.
RMA could be really relieved by that, but they've already done all the work to create the supplemental coverage option.
Yeah, there's not going to be much use of SCO in the Corn Belt, because if you look at Illinois, for example, only 3% of the program acres are in PLC. So if you look at, and Iowa's 2%. So Corn Belt, less than 5% of the acres are in PLC in all states in the Midwest.
Do you think this decision says anything about what farmers believe the price of corn and soybeans will be over the next 5 years? It was given to them in that form, if you believe 330 and above or 330 and below for corn, ARC versus PLC.
And they probably built their expectations around that. And again, corn, if you believe that corn prices are going to average above 330, ARC County is probably the way to go. There was also the front-end loaded payments on Arc County that probably pushed people towards Arc County versus PLC.
Tell me about wheat.
Wheat split. Wheat was an interesting crop, and all of our analysis said that that was going to be a pretty close crop, because if you looked at the break-evens, PLC and Arc County, it could have went either way. And in fact, it did split pretty evenly. 56% of the acres went to Arc County for wheat, 2% for Arc IC, and 42% for PLC. So it split pretty evenly. Some farmers thought Arc County was the way to go. Some others thought PLC. That was an even split. You know, you could have, from our analysis, it could have went either way. Although there were parts of the country where you knew 2014 was going to have large payments for wheat, and that included Oklahoma, Oregon, Montana. So those areas price skewed more towards Arc County than other areas. But I would take that as just a general indication. Wheat was not like corn and soybeans. It was a close call, and farmers still seemed to prefer a revenue program over a reference price program.
The politics behind the development of the Farm Bill really divided it into the three programs that came forward: Arc County for the Corn Belt, ARC-IC for some northwestern parts of the United States and PLC for the south. Do you see that geographical division when you look at the numbers?
And you see those regional breakdowns show up. And again, just to give you an example, PLC was the predominant choice in Texas. 84% of the acres are in PLC, and they have a lot of rice, cotton, or actually cotton's no longer a program crop, but rice, peanuts, and the southern crops tended to go towards PLC. And the northern states, Midwest, ARC County. ARC-IC was designed for that northwest North Dakota Corn Belt area. And there was, you know, in certain states, 11% of the acres that went into ARC-IC, but overall not a large use of ARC-IC. Less than 1% of the program acres overall went into ARC-IC.
Anything we can learn rolling forward as to what impact this will have over the next 5 years?
Yeah, one of the other things you can take away from the ARC-IC program is that farmers didn't like a complicated program, which ARC-IC was, and people shied away from that. We will see what those decisions mean for the next several years. The one thing I think you can take away from it, though, is that up to this point, people were skeptical whether commodity title revenue programs would be supported. This time, they were.
Gary Schnittke is an ag economist at the University of Illinois. You may read more from him on the Farm Doc Daily website. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We did a real quick check with Gary Schnittke about crop insurance because I suspected some of you were thinking, hey, I cannot insure beans. And some of you said, yes, I can. And that's because that's the way it split southern counties in Illinois. And I didn't really, wasn't able to figure out Iowa and Missouri, which is where we need to know. But sometimes you can insure double crop soybeans in the United States. On the phone line with us now to take up what's been happening with the cash market outside of the Climbers facility near Logansport, Indiana, is Pete Peterson. Thanks, Pete, for being with us. Much movement in your area in the last week?
Yeah, moving to corn has been very steady. We've been dumping probably 140 to 170 trucks per day, kind of surprising with all the rains in our area. The hardest problem is finding a good route to get here, I guess.
And your expectations for, a good route to get here. They're having a tough time, aren't they?
Yep.
Expectations for the coming week?
This week, we've had a little bit of a pop in the markets. CBOT with the, I blame a little bit on the inclement weather, but base has been holding strong at this point in time, firming up, I should say. Right now we're at 3 over going to our Climbers facility at 362. Soybeans are been pretty steady too. We're at 9 over right now at 978 into our Delphi facility.
Do you think basis can manage to hold with this uptick in the marketplace if it continues?
It goes right back to whether or not the grain moves. I have seen times when you get the best of both worlds. Markets rally and producers tend to hold out sometimes, thinking it might be a little bit longer rally, and basis may have to do more coaxing than it's used to at that point.
Thanks so much. What are your bids for the day?
Let's see. Climbers, like I said, cash, we're at 362, and corn and Delphi beans, we're at 978.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Pete Peterson is with the Andersons. Back in 2 minutes.
It's National Eat Your Vegetables Day. It's also National Apple Strudel Day. By the way, we like the latter over the former. On this day in agricultural history in 1239, King Edward I of England was born. His coronation feast included 278 bacon hogs, 450 pigs, 440 oxen, 430 sheep, and more than 22,000 hens. In 1862, W.H. Fancher and C.M. French patented an unusual plow-gun combination. To the metal plow with wooden handles, the pair added a gun that could shoot grape shot or balls of 1 to 3 pounds weight. The combination was proposed to give farmers, according to the patent, quote, and efficient weapon of defense at very slight expense, in addition to that of a plow. In 1870, George Cormack, the creator of Wheaties cereal, was born. While mixing a batch of bran gruel, Cormack accidentally spilled some of the mix on a hot stove, where it sizzled into a crisp flake, the Wheaties prototype. Cormack tested 36 varieties of wheat before developing the perfect flake. And in 1881, Sir Arthur Hardin died, an English biochemist. He was co-recipient of the 1929 Nobel Peace Prize for Chemistry for work on the fermentation of sugar and the enzyme action involved. And that's this day in agricultural history.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Drew, it appears that the tropical storm coming onshore in Texas will drop a great deal of rainfall across the growing regions of the center part of the United States. Can you take me through its pattern?
Absolutely. Tropical Depression Bill is falling apart at this hour, at least as far as an organized, significant tropical weather event. But the remnant low-pressure system is spreading a lot of rain northward into parts of Oklahoma as we go through the day today and overnight tonight and tomorrow as well. The east half of Oklahoma's wheat country will likely end up with 2 to 6 inches of rainfall. There's going to be some potential for something locally greater in a county or two where we could end up with 8 inches or so. Those wheat areas in eastern Oklahoma will suffer some more grain quality declines. The head sprouting will be the biggest issue since the crop is mature in this region and ready to be harvested, but the rains just keep on coming. This will be the end of the rain for a while, and they will see drier weather. The remnants of this low will come through southern Missouri and eventually into the lower parts of the Midwest, but a lot of the heavy rain will be spent out over the Ozarks in southern Missouri and in the Green Mountains of eastern Oklahoma, and so we'll end up with a weaker system in the lower Midwest. Parts of the Ohio River Basin will still get 1 to 3 inches of rain with some local totals over 4 inches. Most of that will likely occur on Friday into Saturday, and the system will finally get out of the way right after that, with a cool front coming in behind it to generate a few lingering showers into the first part of next week.
Any worries that this system will track a bit further north and dump more rainfall on the northern parts of Missouri and into the primary Corn Belt growing regions across the northern half of Illinois, or is it really going to run along that southern Missouri and then along the Ohio River Basin?
I think it will move mostly in that area, in the more southern region. I think there is some potential that rain will reach a little further to the north, but all of the heaviest rains, I think, will still be trapped in the Ozarks, and I don't think the odds are very high that we'll see tremendous volumes of rain occurring further north than I-70 across the heart of the Midwest. So I think that for the most part, it will be an Ohio River Valley area problem, potentially.
You mentioned that rains will stop for a while. What do you mean by that across the Corn Belt?
Yeah, that's a good question. What do I mean? I think for the most part, we'll go through a short-term period of drier weather in hard red winter wheat country in particular. There will be a frontal boundary that will slip southward from Canada into the heart of the Midwest during the early part of next week. And that frontal boundary will end up going stationary across portions of the lower Midwest and into a small part of the central plains. And so there will be a trigger mechanism there for some additional showers and thunderstorms. The precipitation will lift to the north as a warm front, though, as we get into midweek next week. And once we're south of that frontal boundary, there should be several days of good drying conditions with temperatures working their way back into the 80s and lower 90s through most of these wetter areas in the southern parts of the Midwest.
Thanks, Drew. Drew Lerner, of course, with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Find him again on our website very shortly at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org. This has been the Closing Market Report.